The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPont.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Gardeners, they're a special brand of folks. There's just something about them and their connection to the earth and the seasons. You can just know that there's something going on there. We're going to be talking about spring gardening and taking questions for our expert, David Rodriguez, but also we want to hear from folks out there who have a love for gardening. How did you get started? What joy does it spark in your life? And you can call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at TPR Source. And our expert, David Rodriguez, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service Agent for Horticulture here in Bexar County. And David, great to have you.
Yeah, good seeing you again.
So how did you get started messing around with plants?
That's a good question. I don't remember a lot when I was young, but some of the best memories is when I was about three or four, growing my own sweet corn and corn.
And where was that?
In my parents' backyard, and then a gentleman, my dad used to do some landscape yard work. His name was Mr. T and Mr. Trotman, and he used to grow those old heirloom tomatoes and just put them on a wooden stake and pinch them and train them up. And I think I remember 5 or 6, 7, 8 years old, kind of learning from him how to do those techniques. And then my father worked with the Grimm's Nursery and Landscape, which used to be a big nursery and landscape company many, many moons ago. He worked with them 50 years, and so I was kind of a protege of the industry, you know, working growing plants, selling plants, landscaping, residential, commercial, and then all the fun part was growing vegetables after work or at the nursery, setting them in raised beds and containers and eating them when we can and adding them to our lunches. So especially with the labors, liking jalapenos and serrano peppers and tomatoes and onions and all that. So a lot of good memories on that. And gardening's good for us, healthy for us, and then all the benefits that come with it as well.
And you just didn't become a hobbyist. You went all the way in, got your degree.
I was born and raised in it all my life, basically, yeah.
And it has brought you many joys?
Oh, definitely. It's we're urban farmers in this big city of San Antonio, and we have a long, old tradition with the Belgians and the winter garden. You know, in 74, David, we had 34 family vegetable farmers, mainly the Belgians. And those are all gone when urban sprawl started here in the early 80s. And it's kind of sad, you know, but backyard gardening, particularly growing tomatoes and planting beautiful Texas superstar plants, you know, plants for bees and pollinators and hummingbirds and butterflies and all that. It's all part of the environment that we have and we need to cherish and really enjoy and contribute to as well.
My own personal story, gardening story. My father was obsessed with the lawn. He was a lawn gardener, and I was the only one who really was interested in growing veggies. Even as a child, it's like I wanted to grow vegetables and do that. And wherever I had a plot of land somewhere in my life, I always planted vegetables and wanted to grow. And I think it comes from the cheapskate in me. I just want to have free vegetables, free food, and it's the best food, is, you know. So I think it helps you.
Yes.
Puts you in sync with time, I think, because you have this process, this cycle of life that's
happening. Start to end, yes.
And the seasons, and mm-hmm. you have an appreciation. I think you're in greater connection with the weather. The weather's not just something that's in between you and your car. It's just something that now you pay close attention. You look at the cycles. You wonder, well, how cold will it get tonight? You know, will I have to cover things up? Shall I plant now or should I wait a week? All these things and getting out and getting the dirt under your fingernails.
Definitely.
And having a greater understanding of our entire system.
Getting the kids involved at a young age, and when we have challenges of the type 2 diabetes and obesity, you know, we all need to eat healthier, more fresh fruits and vegetables, exercise. All that comes with gardening, and then the beauty of it, you know, this edible landscape that a lot of people are doing now, using spinach and kale and cabbage, even if you don't eat it, which would be shameful, but it looks very beautiful, very attractive in the landscape, you know, and a lot of people are starting to do that as well at this time.
They still have the children's garden at the
botanical? Oh, we still have it. Yeah, we start March the 2nd. We're starting a little bit later this year. So
if
we
you
might
have
talk
a child,
yes.
You people need to really take advantage of this fantastic program
yes.
at the San Antonio Botanical Gardens. It is a youth garden system where you pay a nominal fee.
Yes.
It's practically nothing.
Yes.
And you get assigned a plot. You go out every Saturday morning with your child.
With garden mentors.
Garden mentors. Mm-hmm. They give you everything you need, including the instructions and the seeds and everything. And they will take care of this beautiful, maintained plot. And you will grow the best vegetables your entire life.
Yes, that's true.
Everyone needs to take advantage of
this. We have second generation folks that are in the program now. That's pretty amazing.
It is a great
yeah.
program.
Yeah.
Let's get a caller on the air, 210-614-8980, and Lourdes. And Lourdes, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks a lot. I have kind of a two-pronged question, maybe too much information. But my first thing is I have some established shrubs that have been in there for probably 50 years.
Okay.
I hate to rip them up. Do you think that their lifespan is going to be much more? I kind of want to do all new plantings with Texas natives, but this I just have giant shrubs surrounding the house, so.
Well, I guess that's up to you. It sounds like you're ready to get going on to a different phase. You know, it's just like when we change the flooring or carpet or paint inside the house, you know, the outdoor living space, you know, it might be time to go in and take the ones that look overgrown, look tired or beat up over time, and maybe leave a few of the better-looking ones and then start. You know, we always say the four P's of gardening, is plan, get the dimensions, find out the sun that you have, the sun requirements, the size, the height of the plants, and then prepare the soil, purchase high-quality plants, and then plant them. Work with a Texas-certified nursery professional to help you. And not only look for native plants, but also look for well-adapted plants that have really proven the test of time, be it Texas superstar plants and such plants like that as well.
Does that answer your question, Lourdes?
Yes, I'm really interested in learning about these superstar plants. That's why I took my lunch late so that I could listen and find out what those are. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right, and you were talking about planting edible gardens. So and right now in my front yard, I've got raised beds, and I've got parsley. And lavender. And these are things that are, and of course, rosemary. You don't have to do anything to rosemary. And it's they all grow like gangbusters.
Oh, yes.
And they're very, you know, they keep everything nice and green. And it's just different types of parsley.
Yeah.
So
and the fall and winter time with your kale and your broccolis and cauliflowers and let them bloom, the yellow dainty flowers, particularly when there's not that much blooming for the bees and the beneficial insects.
Yes.
And then when they tire out, then you can switch them out with something else.
You'll see a lot of butterflies coming if you let your cauliflower bloom. So if you break off the big stalk and let the little stalks bloom, it's a great way to do that. We're going to take a break. The number to call in if you got a question for David Rodriguez as we talk about spring gardening. Spring is springing right now. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. What is the best tomato to plant right about now? Any questions you might have, call in. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Spring gardening, the hedgehog, or what is it, the groundhog, Puxatony Phil, said that winter is over, but there's no guarantee that we're going to get a killer frost. But I already got my tomatoes in the ground, David.
Yes, a lot of people are. And we're selling the rodeo tomato at the rodeo at the HEB Little Buckaroos on the farm, so you're one of the brave ones to get them planted early. But you're right, spread them out. Maybe plant a few early, pot them up in gallon containers, and then plant a few more during the month of March. But by the first week of April, they need to be bigger plants. planted, but yes.
I think if you wait until it's absolutely guaranteed there's no more freezes, then you've waited too long.
Yeah, you're
so
right.
So you really, because it gets so hot so soon.
That's correct.
That you just want to try and get the plants in the ground, your peppers or whatever, and then if you get a freeze, well, just c'est la vie and try again.
Well, if you get that insulate, that white cloth, spend a few dollars on that. You can reuse them every year, and it keeps the cold winds, and it protects 5 degrees extra temperature. So that does help if we're worried that a cold front's coming in.
All right, and let's go to Miguel. The number is 210-614-8980. Miguel, you're on the air with David Rodriguez.
Hey, thanks, y'all. Just two kind of functional questions real quick.
Okay.
Is it too late already in the season to put in sweet white onions? And the second question I had is, are there any good edible volunteer-type plants for our region? Thanks, and I'll take my answer up the air.
Okay.
Okay, Miguel, thank you for that.
So onion planting, we plant bunches of onions, which are little plantlets, little baby onion plants, and usually they come in bunches of about 60 plants. We can start as early as planting them, typically about mid-November to about March 1st, January, early February being the best time. We plant short day and we plant neutral day onions. And those represent, each ring of an onion represents a leaf. So if we grow 11 to 13 rings, then we'll have huge onion ring type onions. So we tell folks, if you get an opportunity to go to Dixondale Farms, dixondalefarms.com, their website. They've been in business 102 years. They're in Carrizo Springs, Texas. They're the supplier of all the commercial onions for growers throughout the U.S., all the seed companies are about 90% come out of that facility, and you can read up. So 1015Y is like the Texas Super Sweet Onion that A&M released many moons ago, and then they would have red ones as well as white ones. Now, he said about volunteer, vegetables. One you might want to look for is these bunching onions. Since he talked about white onions, these multiplying or bunching onions is one of these Shiro-type plants. You plant one little bulblet, and by the end of the season, you can thin them as green scallion-type onions, or you can share them with friends, and they can plant them, and one individual bulblet becomes many on one plant, and then you share them, you plant them, and that's a plant that can last 15 to 20 years plus. So that's one consideration.
But you can still, if you want to plant onions, you can still do it right now.
You can still find them right now. Feed storage in your favorite nursery should have them.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Misty. Hi, Misty. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about raised bed gardening. I try to do it with my son, who's a preschooler, and the other one, who's a toddler.
Okay.
And every year I go to the nice nursery, and I buy the nice plants, and I buy some soil to reestablish, and yet we get enormous, beautiful plants, but never any actual vegetables of any quality whatsoever.
Okay.
Well, and I'm starting to feel a little discouraged.
No, don't be discouraged.
$100 at that every year when it never really works out. What am I doing wrong?
Here are some of the guidelines. Warm weather vegetables with fruit that fruit and have seeds, tomatoes, beans, eggplant, cucumbers, squash, zucchini, need full sun. Cool weather vegetables, which are typically leafy green type plants, can take about 4 to 6 hours of sunlight. So the biggest problem that people have is they're not giving them enough sun. They need to be spaced out so they have ample room to grow and ample air circulation to minimize disease pressure and nutrition. So you really need to incorporate some real good finished compost with what you have there every planting season. Incorporate some organic, natural, granulated fertilizer worked into the planting area, copious amounts. And then look at the Bexar County Extension Service homepage, the website, and the horticulture recommended plants. We have both the spring and fall vegetable lists. And these are guidelines of what to plant, when, varieties, seed versus transplant. And these are varieties that have really proven the test of time that most of the local independent nurseries do carry, and farmers have had success and backyard gardeners for many, many years. Look at this as an approach for this spring, and then also look at the Children's Vegetable Garden Program blog, the Children's Vegetable Garden Program blog. David talked about the Children's Vegetable Garden Program at the Botanical Garden. We have archived all the spring and fall agendas. Use it as a guideline of what the kiddos out there plant, maintain, and harvest. And I always tell folks, if the 8-year-olds can do it, so can you.
But issues are, is there enough sun?
Sun is the big issue. That's the biggest question that people have, is they don't grow like tomatoes and the warm weather crops, the sun and nutrition.
So things will get really leafy and they'll do things, but they're not going to produce
because they need the sun.
Or it could be overcrowding.
You need to space them for air circulation, and you need to let them mature. Yes.
Because they're going to be competing with each other, and sometimes they're fighting each other, and they're not enough out there to.
And that's where we get insect and disease pressures if we don't have enough air circulation around the plants.
Or the soil is too poor.
Compost, finished compost, and of course some granulated organic fertilizer.
But
copious amounts.
If you wanted to turn kids on, little kids, something really easy to plant.
Carrots.
Carrots take a long time.
Well, but they're fun for kids. Carrots, onions, small fruited tomatoes, and cucumbers, and bush beans.
Beans, that's what I was saying. Beans.
Bush beans.
Beans are the best.
Yeah, bush beans.
I mean, they grow very quickly.
Yes.
And then you watch them, they climb up. Every kid knows Jack and the Beanstalk story.
Yeah.
Suddenly that story takes on new meaning. They see a beanstalk. What does it mean? Jack got a handful of beans. There you go. And now you're going to see, and you will get these fantastic tasting string beans that you can eat right out of the garden.
Yes. And everything else you can look at, broccoli and all that. And a lot of times when the children have bad eating habits, unfortunately it's us as adults teaching them that, but it's surprising when they grow it, they will eat it. It's very surprising because they did it, you know.
Right, and there are also some really mild radishes
that are good. Yes,
like
definitely.
The French breakfast radishes.
Delicious.
All right, let's go to Stephen. And Stephen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, good day to talk about gardening. It's beautiful.
Yes.
My question was, for people that rent and can't dig around in the yard, or people live in apartments, what are good things to plant, like in pots, potted plants?
Yes.
Okay, I got another caller very similar. Let me get Isaiah on as well. Isaiah, we can get a twofer here.
Okay.
Isaiah, go ahead.
Yeah, basically my question is similar to what his question is. I own the home, but I have very small area to actually put anything, so I've been putting stuff in mason jars.
Okay. Mason jar might be a little bit small. 10-inch would be minimum diameter size container if you can go, but it's a little bit challenged to keep them well watered. I like something equivalent to a 20-inch diameter plus container. And sometimes some of these nurseries that sell these big trees, you can buy those black containers for a real nominal fee. Use some real good potting mix. Work in some slow-release container fertilizer with that, and then get the amount of plants that you need. You might rotate them a little bit if they're on the patio or balcony to make sure you get ample sunlight. The more sunlight, of course, it's going to be a little bit harder to water with the wind. When you do water any container plant, make sure you water thoroughly all the way around the container till it sufficiently drains from the bottom. Don't let any water stagnate in the saucer for any long period of time. And since it's such in a confined, small root system in a container, I also supplement once a week with a good water-soluble fertilizer. And then follow the Bexar County Extension Service horticulture site for the recommended plants to consider planting both in spring and in the fall time.
You know something you can do with mason jars with gardening is sprouting seeds.
The sprouts.
I can't believe how much they charge for sprouts at the store.
They're expensive.
And it's real expensive, but sprouts are a superfood.
Excellent.
You can make them and grow them quickly in mason jars.
Yes.
There's lots of videos online about how to do that. And it's also something fun you can do with kids.
Very fun.
And it is a great food source.
If you haven't gone to Johnny Select Seeds, they have just a whole section on the sprouts. And there's radish sprouts, broccoli sprouts, and all these sprouts, the energy and the nutrition you get out of those things is unbelievable, yes.
Let's go to Frank. And Frank, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to know about knockout roses. They're not quite in the market yet, according to my nursery man.
Okay.
And I was wondering if there's new colors. I know they haven't been around long, and they're really doing well in San Antonio.
Yeah. And the one that's blooming real pretty, and it seems to bloom.
What is a knockout rose?
Knockout rose is one of our one of the 24 Earth Kind roses that A&M has selected. The best one that has really, really proven the test of time and really looks the best, I think, now is a single red one. But there are doubles, there are pinks, there are yellows. I think there might even be a white one in that series. But really, really, when it comes down to it, the single red and the double red is really the best, low input, best performing of all the colors in the Knockout Rose series. They're landscape roses. 4 feet minimum. They get up to 6 feet tall. They're ever blooming. They have Chinese rose blood in them. That means they're very, very disease resistant, drought resistant once they're established as well.
Roses, that's one of those things people really just, I'm afraid to become a rose guy because you just become a fanatic. Uh-huh. You just go over
You're
the
right.
top with
You're
roses.
Right.
A lot of options. You know, it's just something really to get into. I'm saving that for my retirement days.
The three is the Knockout, the single red, the Grandma's yellow, Basham's Party Pink, which is a Knockout winner. A beautiful pink one. And then Miss Dudley Cross. Those four are the minimum. And that's Miss Dudley Cross is a San Antonio rose, which in all the old neighborhoods of San Antonio, it's a pass-along rose from grandma and great grandma from cutting. So if you can find any of those four or all four of them, they're really well worth adding to your landscape.
Should people be doing things, getting their getting ready for the purple martins to return?
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, because ours at the children's garden come around February the 16th, like here pretty quick. So usually late January or now. Folks lower the houses, they clean them out real good, open them up, raise them, and then the first wave, the scouts start coming in. So I think this weather that's expected this week, we're going to start seeing them. It's amazing that they're always on time. They fly from Brazil, and then they come from the north down, and they don't have GPS. They always find the place where they're supposed to be.
They've got the original GPS. and it's the same birds will come back to the same nesting location.
They can have, if you have a large enough a purple martin house, you can have up to three generations, and that's what we have at right now at the Children's Garden.
So if you have some nest, maybe you have a birdhouse, now's a good time to take it down and
clean it out,
yeah. Get out the old nesting materials.
Yes.
And anything else I got to do to it to make sure that it's ready to go?
Just make sure that when you raise it back up, safety, and make sure it's firmly supported, and keep an eye on the English
starlings.
Those little birds, because they tend to get in there and start building their little nests, so sometimes you might want to check on them and make sure.
But the purple martins depend on
humans. Yes, they do.
And they're very beneficial to have.
Oh, they're unbelievable. A lot of people think they take care of mosquitoes. They only take care of about 3% mosquitoes, but they take care of a lot of the other bad insects as well.
And they're just good to have.
They're nice. Beautiful. They sing so pretty.
All right. So we're going to continue talking about spring gardening with David Rodriguez, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service Agent for Horticulture here in Bexar County. Take your questions, your comments. We really want to hear from folks. Tell us how you got into gardening, what it means to you, how does it add to your life. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this quick break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Spring gardening, now is the time. Clear off that bed that you have, and start putting some plants in the ground. David Rodriguez, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service Agent, is here. He's with the Bexar County. And what is the top plant? What do you say is the thing you just really got to get into the ground?
Right now, fruit trees, big time fruit trees, berries. Fruit trees, be it peaches, plums, pomegranates, you know, just to name a few, berries, blackberries, the grapes, right now is prime time to find the best inventory and to start getting them planted right now. Planting them, training them, going to Aggie Horticulture under the fruit tree section, using those guidelines to help you with these specific crops. But fruit trees is big time right now.
If you have fruit trees in your area growing, now's a good time to get out there and get those pruning shears going.
Do some training, pruning them.
Because if they have too much, it's not good. You got to cut them back.
Yeah, you need to open up the centers to let better air and sunlight.
Like a wine glass.
Peaches are like a champagne or wine glass, and it's easier to harvest, and better air circulation will be an abundance of fruit and higher quality fruit in that canopy.
All right, and so fruit trees, you know, what do people should be looking for? How expensive are they?
Well, the funny thing on some of these fruit trees, peaches and plums and even pecans, is once you read up on the literature on Aggie Horticulture, you pay for a $40 or $50 specimen. A lot of times you have to cut it back halfway, but you're still going to pay that full price on it. But you need to train them. You have to balance out that root system with that shoot system and get them into a manageable size long-term down the line. But 30 to 50 would be the going rate for a quality fruit tree.
Right, you think now about the number of years, everything you will get from that tree.
Yes,
it's a
bargain. It's a good investment. And a peach that you eat out of your landscape in your garden compared to store, that's no comparison.
Yeah, you know, peaches, they don't produce any more sugar on the peach after you have taken it off the
that
tree.
That is correct.
Unlike some other fruit. So yes, the longer you can keep it on the tree, the sweeter it becomes, juicier it becomes. You just can't replace
just
that.
Just like strawberries, yes.
All right, let's go to Allison on the phones. And Allison, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. So I am a transplant from Colorado, and one of the things that I absolutely love about San Antonio is our growing seasons and how long it is and how amazing it is. But can't believe I'm asking this, but I am having a serious problem with mint. I've tried it in shade. I've tried it in sun. I've tried planting it in various different seasons, and I just cannot get traditional, you know, just normal mint to grow here. So I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong, but I would love some advice.
What you want to do is try to find the traditional spearmint. It's a larger leaf spearmint, and they call it yerbabuena. And that's the best of the best mints for iced tea and all that good stuff.
Mojitos,
all that good stuff. Very good. So look for yerbabuena, which is a selection of spearmint, really. And so the way I've approached this is it likes the cooler weather until it gets hot, and often it looks real tired unless you kind of move it into a shadier area, give it a little bit more water, or you just make cuttings off that plant and have other ones and then restart fresh plants for the fall time. So the summers here, if they're getting a lot of hot sun and you're watering them, that really doesn't help them too much. So it's better to maybe grow it in a pot than move it more in a shadier area. 2 to 6 o'clock here from mid-June to mid-September is very extreme. So if we can shade some of these container plants off, they'll be much happier. And then like any green leafy type herb, the key is a large enough size pot, good drainage. When you water, don't try to water dead center. Water the edges all the way around. Use a water-soluble fertilizer maybe once a week. And pinch, pinch, pinch. Basil, mints, all these greeny-type things. Do not let them flower. The bees love them when they flower. But if you're going to consume them, the quality is the new growth that emerges. So pinch them, pinch them. Look for this yerbabuena and see how that will perform for you this year.
A lot of people, their problem with mint is that it grows too much.
Yeah, especially they put it near a leaky faucet or something, and then boop, it's taken over the area.
So there you got plenty of mint.
Yeah, and they root real easy. You just pull a little cutting, and they usually have roots on them. You put them in little containers, and boom, you got a new plant.
All right, Joel. And Joel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
David and David, hey, how's it going?
All right, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a couple of questions. I'm going to try to make it real quick, and I'll take my answers off the air. But I have absolutely horrendous, terrible caliche clay in my backyard. It seems like the only stuff that'll grow in it is weeds. and I'm always back there kind of pulling stuff out. I'm really, really want to get into like backyard gardening, and okay. I just want to know what I got to do to get that ready and get it neat, you know, nutrition rich and grow some stuff back there. And then I also wanted to get your perspective on, you know, if that's not the way I want to go, maybe raised bed versus vertical gardening.
Okay, good great question.
Thanks, Joel.
So our parent material is limestone, so we have a very high pH soils. That's not going to change. So often we have to work with what we have, and it's hard to work with solid rock or caliche. So you either try to scrape as much as the existing topsoil that you have and berm it up. If that's not the answer, container gardening's a good route. Raised bed's an excellent route. And then bring in a good desired mix, either bags of garden or landscape mix, or buying it bulk, going to pick it up in a pickup truck trailer, or getting them to deliver. There's a lot of good places around the area.
It doesn't cost that much.
It's a good investment. The key is, if they have a lot of sand mixed with this blend, tell them to cut it with some more finish-based, manure-based compost. So pay a little bit more, bring in a desired mix if need be, and there's nothing wrong with that. But organic material breaks down, be it mulch in your flower beds or compost in your raised bed gardens. So you do need to replenish it occasionally. Lay copious amounts of a slow-release organic garden fertilizer, and then just follow the guidelines on the Extension Bexar County website for the recommended varieties of seed and transplants to plant both in the spring and in the fall.
Got an email from Kathy. Can we still plant wildflower seeds?
If they bloom in the spring, you really need to put the seeds out, bluebonnet and other September, October, early November at the latest. So if it's a spring blooming one, yes, it's too late. But you can find transplants at this time, good healthy transplants. Texas bluebonnets are out there at a lot of the nurseries. And a few other plants, wildflowers will be available as transplants as well. If you want to try a few of those, try them. Otherwise, wait for September, October to plant the spring wildflower.
I buy the bluebonnets in the little pots and I plant them in, will it reseed?
Yes. Bluebonnet is a bean. So the bees pollinate them. It turns a little purple at the tip of the bottom of the flower. You want to grow the beans as big as you can, and when they start turning brown, ready to split on the plant, you can either harvest them or let them drop in place and then try to get them to naturalize in that same area like they do in the native habitats the following year.
So the ones that you would buy at the store in the little pots and you replant, how different are those bluebonnets from ones I will see growing naturally?
They're the same ones. They're just selections that people are using as an option as a transplant overseed. Now, of course, the Aggies, we have a maroon Aggie bluebonnet.
Got to do that.
We have purple out there, and there's a few other colors. But if you look at some of the different, there's 7 species of bluebonnets in Texas. If you look at the different hues, a lot of those genetic mutations occur in the wild habitats as well.
Got a question from Norma on Twitter. I have a newish dog that likes to pee on things. Can I still eat veggies from my garden if I wash them really well?
Yes, if you wash them thoroughly. The problem is, particularly on female dogs, their urine's a little bit stronger. So maybe put a little fence around the garden, but thorough washing will always help. But try to keep any animal out of the garden for food safety issues. But thorough watering, because we don't know when it peed and how much and all that. But when in doubt, safety. Don't consume it if you think it's a health issue.
Right, and who knows what other critters have gotten. You get the tequaches, everything.
Squirrels,
everything else getting into your garden. Who knows what's been prowling.
But always clean real good. And if there's a bruise or damaged fruit, that something might have gotten into the fruit, it's best to feed your compost pile with that.
All right, let's go to Barry. And hi, Barry. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I've got this problem this year, and it just happened with the last week and a half. My front lawn is now 30% dandelions. What can I do to get rid of them without ruining the rest of the yard?
Make dandelion wine, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, this weed problem's a mess, and I think it all happened with that record-breaking early November freeze. All the heavy clay, soil's not breathing with that monsoon of rains we had in the fall. Your best weed management tool, Barry, is if you can't pull them, grub them, or pop them out with those weed poppers, is to mow and mow often. Do not let a weed, any weed, flower and set seed. One weed will become potentially thousands the following year. And mow, because a lot of weeds, just by mowing them, letting them grow up, will use their reserves of energy and then really, really kick up your nutrition. Fertilize much, much heavier this spring. Thicken up the turf grass and consider pretty soon here, if you have not done so, core aerate your lawn with a core aeration machine and put a half an inch of premium lawn dressing out there.
All right. 210-614-8980. Don't let your lawn go to seed. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking spring gardening with David Rodriguez, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service Agent for here in Bexar County. And if you've got a question or a comment about why you love to garden, why you think other people should garden, it's a good thing. 210-614-8980. And we've got Bob. And hi, Bob. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my phone call. I know we can grow avocado trees here in San Antonio, and I've seen a couple fairly large ones in the downtown area.
Yes.
I was wondering if you have a recommendation for a cold hardy species that one can grow on their property, and if so, how would you prepare and plant that avocado tree? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks for calling, Bob.
Yeah, that's a question we've been getting lately, and even the ones they say that are more cold hardier, they're Mexican selections that really just have a little bit more cold hardiness. The selections that are out there too, y'all are used to eating a quality avocado like a Haas avocado out of California or the Mexican ones coming
that's a,
in.
That's a mutant avocado, yeah. That Haas avocado, yeah. That just happened to spring up
that's
in
correct.
Some guy's backyard.
That's correct.
It was so good, they have cloned it a billion times.
That is correct. So Joey would be the closest one that you can try here. But the avocados that you see, Bob, you're correct. They're in deeper soils, microclimates, protected from the cold northern wind, typically in the inner 410 area. If you go 1604 north and it's too rocky and you don't have deeper soils, unless you have a microclimate or a protection for the cold northern wind, an avocado potentially can grow up to 30 feet. So I think we're going to be limited. We really need to do some work on dwarf selections that we can grow in the patio that will produce. We don't have one right now, but we need to look at that in the future. But if you don't have deep soils, microclimate, and be able to protect these young ones, look for Joey and these newer selections that are out there. I think they're well worth trying if you have that area to do that.
So when you say microclimate, you look at some of these avocado trees that are miracle trees here in San Antonio. They've been growing for 20 years, and they're putting
out
great fruit.
They're all protected areas.
They're like right up against someone's house.
The basilica next to the boiler room over there. And,
you know, they're getting some sort of protection.
Yes.
They'll get like 4 or 5 extra degrees during those freezes because
deeper soils.
Yeah, they're working right up against that. There's something about that particular location. Yeah. So you got to kind of eyeball in your house. Maybe you've got something like that going, and maybe you don't. It's just the luck of the draw.
Maybe next to the eave of the house on these young trees, and you can drop 6 mil plastic and maybe make a little green. But grow these young trees, these avocados, as you would do young citrus, 3 years. Follow the patio citrus guidelines on Aggie Horticulture or PlantAnswers.com, and then if you decide you're ready to plant them, turn that green wood into darker, hardened off wood, and then plant them April, May in the appropriate place in the landscape.
So you really got to want that avocado tree.
That's correct.
All right, let's go to Daniel. And Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, guys, thanks. Just a quick question. I don't know if there's an easy answer for this or not, but in my front yard, I have St. Augustine grass. It's
okay.
Really established. It's been there for years. And, of course, it takes a lot of water. And when I water it in the summertime, it looks great, but there's like three or four patches that seem to require more water more regularly. And,
okay.
And it's not like it, they're getting more direct sunlight because they can be right next to another area that has direct sunlight.
Okay.
But these three or four patches every year, I don't know if I need to dig it up. I don't know if you have any suggestions or just something simple.
If you need to consider core aerating your lawn and core aerate that area even better to let better gas exchange in the root system.
Is that like when you're poking holes into the
poking
ground?
Poking holes, yeah. And then put about a half an inch or so of a good lawn dressing in that area. And the organic material in the lawn dressing acts as a sponge. You know, 40 to 60% of outdoor landscape water in the summer months is in the turf grass. If you can core aerate the lawn and use the lawn dressing now through March is the best time, you can cut down your water bill potentially up to half, and that makes a big difference. Try that. If this continues in the next 2 or 3 years, then there's probably a lot of rock or backfill when they built the residence, and there's not good soil there. You might have to dig that area out, excavate it a little bit, check it out, and then bring in some good pasteurized topsoil in there. So try the core aeration and some of the lawn dressing first. Do it every 3 years around now through March and see if that will relieve the problem there.
Got another grass question here with Jeff. And Jeff, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I own a house in the Alta Vista area where luckily I do have dirt. I have a very small backyard that's really just weeds, and I'd like to put some sort of lawn grass in there. What's the latest and greatest on, you know, drought-tolerant grass for that area? And another question, if we have time, is for my front yard, I need more shade. I planted a Mexican sycamore on one part, but was looking for a recommendation for a fast-growing shade tree for my front yard. Thank you.
Okay. Mexican sycamore is an awesome tree. You might look at also as Mexican white oak. Mexican white oak, or they call it Monterey oak, moderate to fast growing once it gets established. The three types of turf grasses, St. Augustine gets beat up a lot, but Floratam, St. Augustine is the only one in our research with San Antonio Water Systems and A&M Extension that made it through the drought study test. So that's the only Floratam for the full sun or 6 hours of sunlight. Zoja, which is a semi-coarse blade upright growth habit, look for El Toro. And if it's full sun, no shade, then any of the Bermuda selections should be fine in that area.
And just those seeds? Or
the only one you can put seed down is Bermuda, like Blackjack Bermuda in the month of May. Otherwise, check with like one of your local nurseries that sell fresh sod. And then plant it solid, like carpet, roll it with a sod roller. And then you have, it's like putting a new carpet out. So clean it up real good, level the area out, get fresh from the farm sod, plant it immediately, tamp it down, roll it with a sod roller, lightly water it in real well. And then you got a new lawn.
Let's go to Kathleen. And Kathleen, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air with David Rodriguez.
Yes, thank you. I have two crepe myrtle trees in my yard. And I believe they have a webworm, and I was just wondering what the recommendation is for handling that.
Okay, so when we say webworm, you see like a netting and then actual caterpillars eating the foliage of the plant?
Very, very tiny, and like if I shake the trees, it's almost like very tiny drops coming down.
Okay, if it's drops, like it's raining on you, and they're sticky, that's usually aphids, and that usually happens more in mid to late spring and summertime. So do you see an insect like a caterpillar, or have you seen the insect at all?
No, I don't see the insects. I think it's like you described.
Okay.
It might be the aphids.
Okay, so crepe myrtle aphids tend to come in mid to late spring, summer, and they're sucking the juices out of the plant, and they're basically peeing on us. And then what it is, that black sooty mold occurs thereafter. So normally if we have this problem, they're not getting enough sun, the trees aren't getting good ample air circulation, they're planted too deep in the ground, We need to mulch them a little bit more. So look at all that real close. If we can live with them, live with them. If we need a spray, use a very mild insecticide, something like spinosad or horticulture grade insecticidal soap on those soft body little insect. It's very safe to use and very effective on them.
So people will have crepe myrtles and they will see sort of a dusty kind of a condition on the leaves, and they're not aware that that's an aphid issue.
Yeah, if it looks like it's raining on you underneath it, it's the aphid doing their business on you. If it's white powder, that's like flour, that's a disease called powdery mildew.
And can you spray, you know, put your hose on a high power and sort of like rinse?
You can wash them off too. Yeah, definitely. Since they're such a weak little soft-bodied critter, if you get a good hose attachment, a sprayer, and you just blast them off, that's, yeah, easy to do.
And so we have time for a little update on what's happening with oak wilt here locally.
Yeah, it's still an issue, and we want to make sure that if you do any pruning on any species of oak tree, if it's above your skill level or safety issue, always get a certified registered arborist from the San Antonio Arborist Association. Make sure if you do any pruning at all times, to immediately seal each individual cut on that tree. If you're not sure the species of the tree, I think it's an oak, but I'm not sure, seal it anyway. Always have a reason to prune.
You can seal it with just like a little spray can.
Yeah, pruning paint, any latex-based paint. July, August, the hottest time and the coldest time of the years are the time. Always have a reason to prune any tree in the first place. It's not just because of brush pickup. So have a reason, but we need to secure. And if you're buying firewood, make sure you buy from a reputable source. Go to the TexasOakWilt.org website, our Texas Forestry sister agency, and they have a wonderful write-up on how to properly, particularly red oak, how to properly store firewood, because a lot of times people are bringing in firewood from areas that they lost trees, and we don't want any potential spread of it,
right,
because it's not stored correctly.
So the beetles or whatever.
Yeah, the nutilid beetles, yeah.
Could still be in that wood, in their firewood.
There,
also, if you don't have a reputable tree person working on your trees,
yes,
they may not have sanitized their gear after they worked on some other tree, and they could be coming in and contaminating your trees. You could lose valuable resources.
Oh, definitely. It's, trees are the most valuable part of our landscape, and it really brings your dollars to that house. And if we lose these specimen live oaks, you know, we all need to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, as a community, got to work together to keep the live oak wilt in check here. David Rodriguez, again, fantastic having you here.
Thank you.
Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service agent, horticulture here in Bexar County. Come check them out at the rodeo. You've
got
stuff going on there.
Yes, sir. Little Buckaroos on the farm. Come on by.
All right. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Happy planting. Stay tuned.